Hi everyone. I am the host, and my name is Peter Babienda, School of Economics, Makerere University, and I am hosting this episode on the living evidence for faster, safer youth jobs. And my guest is Famai Bagole, a public health professional by training and an evidence scientist working on evidence in decision making and knowledge translation. She is the winner of the 2024 award and emerging leadership below the age of 35. Ms. Bagole, can you introduce yourself to the viewers?
Thank you, Peter. As you mentioned, I'm Famai from Ethiopia. I am a public health professional, and I've been working on evidence-informed decision-making for a long time now. And I'm involved in different evidence synthesis related works, including youth employment.
Yep. Just quickly, even before we dive into our discussion on living evidence for faster and safer jobs, just in 5 seconds, how does it feel to win an award at such an age?
It feels really great. It feels like it's an honor. Okay. And at the same time, a responsibility, I would say. And as you mentioned, being in this specific category, it makes me happy that we have a space now to be actually recognized. So wow. Just to make it short, since you said 5 seconds,
I would say
it's an honor and a responsibility. Yes.
And we celebrate with you. We wish you more and more awards, including the Nobel Prize. Okay. So just as you have been in this area of the evidence ecosystem for quite a long time, and we know that decisions don't wait. Your evidence should either fit in the decisions or it will not be used. So in your work, I just wanted to know what makes living evidence more trustworthy and useful than a one-off report?
I think that's a great question. So we're used to evidence syntheses that we do on one-off, right? Which is one of the most common things that we do. But now talking about living evidence, it takes on this form of being updated, right?
Yep.
So one of the defining features of living evidence is the fact that it is updated.
Okay.
So it doesn't go stale, right?
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So especially when we're talking about issues like youth involvement, youth programs, they are by nature, you know, dynamic,
yep.
And they change so fast. And we need to be at pace with them. So having a living evidence and the fact that, or the feature that makes it really trustworthy is our confidence that we are relying on updated and relevant and a timely information.
Yep.
And since we're talking about, again, evidence and decision making, the decision that we're making when we're using living evidence is the updated one.
It's not something
you don't worry if the decision you're making depending on the evidence is an outdated one. So I would say the defining feature of being updated would make it more trustworthy. Yeah.
Very key, as the conditions are not a constant. What worked last year may not work now, and as you have said, many things are going on. So you know, people worry a lot on update fast. What do we mean by fast? What worked yesterday, can it work tomorrow? So there is a lot of worry, and some people think update fast might mean lower quality. So how do you keep standards high?
So you're right, but I would say, you know, relating the timeline or the fact that it is fast with the quality is one of the myths that really we hear a lot. But not even looking at living evidence, be it a living evidence or a one-off evidence synthesis, the quality really depends on the method, the rigor of the method that you build in it. And specifically looking into living evidence, there are specific rigors that you can build in.
Okay.
For instance, just to give you an example, it could be defining inclusion criteria beforehand.
Okay.
It could be to do with documenting every update and every tweak that you do.
Okay.
Or it could do, you know, have to do with using automation when
yes.
possible and if possible.
Mm.
So you would be able to tackle the problem of thinking quality is lower
yep.
by building in rigor into the methods. And you could even think about, I could even argue that having living evidence is better quality because you have the opportunity to sort of build in this quality assurance, right?
Yep.
It's not going to be a final audit. It's going to be a timely and a continuous quality assurance. So generally speaking, it doesn't really matter if it is a one-off or a living evidence. I would even say it would give you more of a chance to tweak your quality assurance, to build in rigor and make it even simpler and quicker with high quality. So I don't think it should be a worry.
Yeah. I like it when you talk of the quality assurance and,
mm-hmm.
and the quality of the review checks. But I think, as you have said, also this should move quickly
mm-hmm.
In line with the updating, as you have said. Now, how would do a living approach keep girls? You know, we are talking of issues of the youth, and you already talked of the vulnerable categories, and some people look at younger girls being in that category. So how would do a living approach, the living evidence approach we are talking about, keep girls? And also the not only girls, we also have youth with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
How can we use the living evidence to keep these categories visible?
That's a very good question, because we're also, you know, talking about this living evidence in the aspect of youth, right?
Yep.
So one of the defining features, or extensive feature of living evidence, is the fact that it is flexible.
Okay.
So you'll get the chance to have, you know, a certain question.
Okay.
And when it is leaving, you get to see the evidence that is coming up, and also you would update it in time. And you have the chance to build in this, you know, disaggregation indicators. It could be to do with girls. It could be to do with different equity indicators, for that matter. As you mentioned, there is disability in there. It could be to see rural versus urban settings, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So having a living evidence really gives you that chance of disaggregating those across time.
Yes.
And seeing if, you know, the evidence that is coming up is making sense on one or the other.
Okay.
And for instance, if you're looking into the effectiveness of an intervention, you could see that across time, when you look at the evidence, it is speaking to the general population, but it might be excluding some groups, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So as you understand that, you have the chance to tweak it into really being making your method sensitive to look into those nuances and provide solutions accordingly. So I would say the fact that it is flexible and it gives you time and also a more robust lens into looking into this different nuances and equity indicators, I think that makes it possible for us to look into these vulnerable groups or girls as need be.
I think I like that, Ms. Famaya. I think that's great. You know, sometimes looking at data in totality, like, you are looking at averages, you are not disaggregating,
mm-hmm.
can make us miss out that. I really like that.
Yeah.
I think this would be clear for the policymakers to pick this. So, you know, the process of evidence, there are so many other players, and some people have said that when you're making a study or evidence, you're making it for the global audience. You're not only making it for your area of study, so you're just looking at Ethiopia or Uganda. So I just wanted to get from you,
mm-hmm.
when global findings point one way, and then you do your study locally, say in Ethiopia, and then the local knowledge is also pointing in another direction,
mm-hmm.
how do you reconcile these two?
Again, this is a very interesting one, because we're based in Africa.
Yep.
And local knowledge is one of the pillars, right?
Mm.
So I think, again, it goes back to the nature of living evidence, really. And I will try to reflect on this, looking at it in a sort of a comparison, right? So when you're doing a one-off study, you would have these questions, and you would end up having a certain response. And you might, you know, in some cases, end up looking at the different sources of evidence, and they're coming up with different responses or a direction of evidence, right? And you would have these differences. And you would have to either wait or, you know, not have the opportunity to adapt. But with living evidence, what you can do is you have the opportunity to see the difference, and it would give you a chance, one, to facilitate a dialogue around it, and look at, you know, the why behind it. And because it is like, when we say living evidence, as I mentioned earlier, it's a sort of updating, right? Looking at different nuances. And what you can do is identify the difference and try and unpack why that is really happening. And I think, of course, it also gives you a chance to not be, you know, cornered and be obligated to choose one of the evidence, right? It would give you a chance to reconcile both the local evidence and also the formal research per se. So I think it would, I think the great advantage is in providing you a space and a time, an opportunity to sort of reconcile that and have a dialogue around it, and also, you know, adjust your methods as need be, if it is a need, of course, to see both sides of the evidence coming up.
That is very interesting. I think
makes sense.
It makes sense. Many people usually get worried when they get that kind of findings, and I like it when you say you need to dig deeper and see why this, and then so the global perception or the global finding can act as a basis for you to move further. And as we are talking of the updating, we are talking of the living evidence, so you never know, conditions could have changed. So I agree with you. Now I now want to find out from you, you know, Prav talked about evidence map. I don't know, they will take some time to tell us what we mean by evidence map. So what determines how a living evidence map is updated?
So the first thing I would say is to understand that not every question needs, or not every evidence synthesis needs to be updated, right? Or it, not every question needs a living evidence, right? But for us to think about something, to decide if a question needs to be responded through a living evidence or not, one, I would say it depends on how dynamic the space is. You know, so we're talking about youth employment, youth engagement, youth programs, right? So by nature, these kinds of issues are fast changing. So for those kinds of questions, we might need to have repeated updates, and it might not be, you know, yearly. It could be even quarterly, sometimes monthly, depending on the issue. So one of the determining things is the dynamicism of the issue. And I think the next thing could be around urgency of decisions that are needed by policymakers or decision makers. And that also takes me to think about resource, right? It might not be always a financial resource. It could be human resource. Do you have the capacity to make, you know, a synthesis living? Can you keep it up? Could be one question. So I would say there are, of course, other things, but a couple of things that I want to reiterate is the dynamicism of the issue, the need for urgent decisions, the resource that you have would determine, I would say, if you're going to have a living evidence for a certain issue or not.
Especially when you touch on the issue of resources, you know, most people, when you talk of resources, what comes to their mind is the funding, but we tend to ignore the the hardware, the human resource, mm-hmm. and the agency. Yeah. So our viewers, as I've told you, have been discussing leaving evidence for faster, safer use jobs. And I was hosting an award winner of the 2024 African Evidence Leadership Award in the Emerging Leaders Under 35 category for the African Evidence Network. And as you said, Ms. Wagole has been working for quite a number of years, about 7 years, working in the evidence in decision making. And she has been digging deeper into how we can use living evidence to inform decision. Now, as we wind up, what would be your final comment to our viewers?
One final thing I would say is that living evidence is one of the methodologies that we can use, especially to respond to dynamic issues that would need updates, and hopefully we'll get more of work around that. Okay. And I would say thank you for the questions as well.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We hope to meet again, and I've been your host, Peter Bavienda. Thank you.
Thank you very much.